This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. Best insurance coverage anywhere. Plus, they'll do everything to save you money because customer service means everything to them. The great people at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Speaking of great people, one of my favorites, Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
I'm as good a day as I am. Up in the air with the NFL. It's kind of crazy. There was just a big trade. I don't know if you happened to see it, but Adam Schefter reported that the Panthers have traded wide receiver Deontay Johnson to the Baltimore Ravens, something that I'm sure Steelers fans will really enjoy, considering they'll get to see him twice now in the coming weeks. Kind of a crazy move and a crazy season. It kind of seems like there's going to be more activity at the trade deadline here than usual.
So I was in trade Anthony Richardson. All right. But in order to, they'd have to inform him, which means they'd have to get him out of bed.
Hopefully get him off the treadmill if he's not there. It's funny you bring that up, though. We were just discussing that. And with Richardson, the announcement being that the Colts will bench him for veteran Joe Flacco this Sunday against the Vikings, a game that I am going to, and now I'll get to see Joe Flacco playing and not Anthony.
There you go.
You can't be an NFL quarterback and tap out because you're tired. And you certainly can't go and tell the media that's why you took yourself out. There's a learning opportunity here, I think, for Anthony Richardson. And it's probably the right route. You have to do something. It's difficult to do that without public-facing consequence. Most of the players on the Colts wouldn't have a job if they did that. To act as if it's kind of casual, not a big deal, that's sending a really bad message. And to Richardson's credit, I don't think that he acts like a prima donna or anything. I think maybe this is just something a young quarterback didn't know. Plus, isn't the rule of thumb, the situation, it's third and long at that point after he just went running around. Whatever it is that happened, don't you grab a guy who's not going to be in the package, you're going to call and tell him to fake an injury? You know, at least buy a couple, you know, 2 minutes or so to kind of catch your breath. That's the veteran move. And those are the kinds of things the younger players need to learn. And sometimes you kind of have to learn it the hard way, which kind of seems like is what's going to happen with Richardson this weekend and beyond, maybe.
Just have a signal to the sideline. I need a running play here. Okay.
I think they even did. I mean,
they did. You know, they ran the ball with Flacco when he came in.
Yeah, it's situational awareness. You recognize what the situation is. They're not gonna, they're not gonna ask Richardson to gun down the field on 3rd and 19 or whatever it was in the middle of the game. They're probably going to hand it off. But there's a variety of ways to handle the situation. None of which, in my opinion, are above. You're a 23-year-old professional athlete. You can't get that tired, okay? Not at the quarterback position. A running back who just cracked off two consecutive 20-yard runs, you're taking him off anyway, whether he wants to come out or not. You need somebody fresh in the game to kind of show that you're still going to do that. But you take your quarterback out in that situation, the reverberation of that in your locker room, in the stadium, across the league is really loud. And that's, I think that the issue is Richardson probably was not aware of that. And if he wasn't, I don't know what he's doing. But, yeah, you've got to probably discuss a few other things. You cannot. That shouldn't be the situation in the first place. I would hope that you're in shape enough that you can handle that. At the very least, you're going to be breathing heavy, but you get 35, 40 seconds. When you're in peak physical condition, that's enough time to catch your breath. He should have been fine. For him to take himself out right away suggests to everybody he's not in shape. And that might not even be true. It's just that's not how you handle that. This is part of dealing with the adversity of the game. You've got to be able to tough through that. And that's, again, it's a lesson he's going to have to learn. Kind of seems like just looking around social media, a lot of people are more inclined to protect him than anything. But, like, I can't say this loudly enough. You're not going to hear this from the players. But you ask any former player off the record right now what they think of that, I promise you their reaction is a lot stronger than mine. You're the leader of the team. You're the guy that the franchise is going to give every benefit of the doubt to. You're eventually going to get a ginormous paycheck, even if you are completing 45% of your passes. You can't do things like that and keep the rest of your team. Something had to be done. And it's a learning opportunity for Richardson. It's a, you know, kind of a bump in the road over the course of what I think is going to be a very good career. But it's definitely something he needs to kind of get in his head now.
No, you can't. You're going to go back to the huddle. And you're going to look at your offensive line, who, by the way, never gets switched out. And you're going to tell them you're tired? Really?
Yeah, the linemen tap out. They're not coming back. And that's not even like a Wally Pipp thing. That's, we don't want you if you're not in shape, okay? You need to be prepared and ready to get on the field. You know, I've got my family Thanksgiving football game in you know, a couple weeks now. I'm going to have to get into better shape than what I'm in right now to probably play that, because we don't get to tap out, even though half of us do anyway. That's not a big deal. That's expected. You're a professional. It's the middle of the game. It's the middle of the season. You're a playoff contending team. Your team needs you out there. You simply have to be out there. And your job does not require you at that point to be at your absolute peak 100% ability to sprint 50 yards down the field. The one thing they're not going to do, they know that you're probably tired, whether you're admitting that or not. They just saw you. They know you can't. They're not going to call a quarterback draw. Okay, you're going to hand the ball off. You're going to be fine. You have to know that. But to tell everybody, I'm not in shape enough to do this. I need a break, guys. Just hang on. I need a break. While they're out there doing all this, keep in mind, he wasn't the only one that ran on that play. Those receivers go 30 yards down the field and, you know, 20 yards coming back to try to block when they see their quarterback outside of the pocket. They just moved a bunch as well. They've got to come back to the line of scrimmage. They moved a lot more than you did, and they do that in every play. And I'm not saying that you know, they're special or anything. It's just they prepare themselves. They are running constantly. They have to be in a certain cardiovascular shape to play. If you're not that at your age, it's inexcusable. You're going to lose a lot of the locker room, and, you know, perhaps fairly so, because this is the one thing you absolutely can control. And there's lots of different ways that you can just kind of say, look, you know, tap the hat, pull the chest, whatever. They'll call a running play. Stay on the field. They're not going to run you again. But to make a big scene of it like that, and then to not even try to cover it up after the game and tell everybody, now, my coaching staff is okay with me taking plays off. It doesn't work for anybody. That's just a bad look for the entire organization. I'm sure that's behind truly why they're doing what they're doing.
I'm going to get the Steelers involved. I got one more about this, though. Is part of that, when you're watching a game and you get to the fourth quarter, you know, like, I realize rotating to keep guys fresh. I got to keep Cam Hayward fresh, got to keep TJ Watt fresh. But the idea is in the fourth quarter, okay, now, right, here we go. But guys like Watt, Bosa, Hayward, okay, Aaron Donald, who formerly played in the league, like, they're still rotated out at times in the fourth quarter. Does that make everybody in the field think that they too can tap out? I mean, you know, seriously, that they too can tap out, because, I mean, you're letting Bosa do it. Why not me?
It's funny, because I was thinking of you last night when the Steelers clinched the win over the Giants with an interception on a play that something called Jeremiah Moon was rushing off the quarterback's right side. not T.J. Watt. There is a strategic advantage in a pass rushing situation, especially when the previous drive they're facing the same thing. This is going to be all passing down the field. Your thoroughbreds, the guys that need to make those plays. It's not so much that they. I'm sure T.J. Watt wants to be on the field. Anybody that wants to make the money of the top edge rusher in the NFL wants to be on the field on third and throw at the end of the game. It's more a matter of making sure that they are fresh enough to be able to get after the quarterback and recognizing strategically, odds are good you're going to be playing in this type of game a few more times. Right. Wearing him down over the course of the year might not help you late in the season. And that's you know, all projective. It's not to suggest this is absolutely going to happen, but is it wiser to give him a play or two if they're backed up, you know, if the opponent is on their side of the field, there's still time on the clock, they're probably going to need to complete more than one pass in order to beat you. So earlier in the drive, is it better to just make sure he's checked, he's ready, got some fluid in him, because you know they're going to start going hurry up after a bit. He's going to have to be ready for that. I think that makes a little bit of sense. I don't know exactly what the rules of rotation are on for any of the players that you mentioned, but we have seen T.J. Watt sub out a few of those plays. That said, you know, there's never a bad time for an interception. There's never a bad time for a sack. There is something to be said about these are the money downs, you know. And T.J. Watt, if anybody, and I've seen a few of them, Antonio Brown comes to mind, but T.J. Watt is one of the most extraordinarily conditioned athletes on the planet.
No doubt. I agree.
He has played an enormous amount of football in his career, and he still looks fresh. He still, as you saw last night, he's still playing at that high-end all-pro level. He is able to handle that. They're going to watch out for him, understandably so. You know, he's human after all. And in some cases, you got to protect him from himself. He's got to be able to go T.J. Watt speed on those plays. So you make sure that he can do that. But I don't think it's more than one or two plays. It's also not a situation where they want him coming back to the alignment and then not rush the passer at all because he's completely exhausted. Right. Anthony Richardson could have handed the ball off. You know, he basically is taking a playoff with that. Watt needed to win that game for the Steelers and, you know, pretty much did on, well, previous drive anyway. It didn't work out so well, but he made the kind of plays that he's been making his entire career on those, as Tomlin would say, on those money downs. You earn the ability to be out there playing those downs, and that, you know, as cliche as the sound, that starts the day after the season when you're working on your conditioning. You're putting in the work to be physically fit, to be able to burn at that level anaerobically and get after the quarterback sprint after sprint after sprint when perhaps quarterback is tired and can't avoid him anymore. So he just goes down. Or for whatever reason, the game plan is to leave your tackles on an island and put your tight end and running back in patterns on every single play and allow Alex Highsmith to have the greatest game of his career because your tackles can't handle the physical onslaught that the Steelers' edge rushers are giving them. And conditioning is a vital part of everything. And managing that conditioning, it's a tough, delicate balance, but a coach needs to be aware of those kinds of things. And it's an area I think probably Brian Daboll failed in pretty remarkably last night, and that led to another loss for them.
The Steelers, look, in this league, one of the keys is you need to win the games you're supposed to win. The Steelers are supposed to win last night's game. What did you see that allowed them to keep the ship rolling and get them to first place?
It was not a clean game for them. And as easy as it would be to kind of go into a rant on the officiating, I thought... And we, you know, we've discussed this as well. They're offensively in particular, they are really calling it tight compared to what they have in the past. Yeah. I've never seen illegal motion called with that little of reason. You know, the purpose of illegal motion is to not allow a player to hide where he's going. If he's in motion and the ball is snapped as a defender, you don't know where he's going to be. That's an unfair advantage. If you get to that point and you're basically stopped, I know the rule says you got to pause for 1 second, but it's not as if they've got a stopwatch out. You know, he was more or less stopped. That fits the spirit of the rule. And the fact that they would flag that in that situation to call that back, that one, of course, was on the Giants. That's, to me, that's intentional. That you're really trying to get offenses to you know, kind of get reeled in on things. And it's silly. It just kind of slows the game down. That said, the Steelers, with Russell Wilson, I feel like they've converted more opportunities to set themselves up positively. You get kind of fluky situations like George Pickens somehow managing to get the same foot down twice, which I don't know about you. I don't know I've ever seen that before.
Neither
that
have
was
I.
Really kind of strange.
Never have.
But
that was weird.
The first thing I said, though, was it is not 2 feet. The rule is both feet. It's in the rule book. They do not say 2 feet. Both feet have to come down. That's the correct call on that. And unfortunately, you know, credit the defender. They did what they're supposed to do. Pickens is – go ask James Franklin. I am certain the Penn State football team, their receiving group, works on getting their toes down. That's the way they're taught. If you're up in the air and you catch the ball, you're pointing your toes straight down. They're meant to come down together. You're not supposed to do one and then the other. Pickens kind of lost control of his body a little bit. I'm not trying to rip on him for it, but that's a touchdown that didn't come off the board. They came off the board. There was another one that came off the board. They put themselves into position to make those plays, but they failed a little bit more than you would like to finish. That said, they scored 26 points. They were able to kind of make the plays they needed to, especially in the second half. Defensively, they picked it up at the end. I just think overall what you're seeing is the collection of just another play, maybe two, drive going their way that wasn't before and hasn't been for the last 4 years. I really think that's the difference. The general sense is that the Steelers have this, you know, 2015 or 2013 Broncos offense. You know, they're marching up and down the field now. Like, they are pretty much maybe a shade above average now. But that's how bad they've been. It looks so holistically different now, simply because they're doing a little bit more. And I think Wilson, you're seeing the leadership on the field, off the field. He's getting more guys involved. I don't know if you were aware, Van Jefferson is still on the team. He had four catches last night.
Sure
I
did.
Think that's two more than he had up to this point in the season.
Yep.
So Darnell Washington had a career game. More guys are getting involved. They're getting more out of their offensive line because their quarterback is not sitting in the pocket all day waiting for the obvious thing to open up. Wilson is reading and reacting correctly to the situation. Not playing perfectly, not throwing every ball right there, but I like the way Tomlin said this after the game, too. There's a bit less rust on him today than there was last week.
Yeah.
That's accurate. I think that's fair. Wasn't a perfect game for him. Poor execution early on. They didn't start off particularly well. The first drive was great, but they stalled out a bit and weren't making those kinds of plays. But they're picking up a 15-yard gain instead of a 5-yard gain, which kind of seemed to be the way they used to do things. They seem like they can compete on 3rd and 8 now, whereas before it was pretty much, you know, a field goal or a punt is coming next. They've got a little bit more a little bit more drive than they did. There's more confidence going on with the team, and that's reverberating down to, you know, the defensive side of the ball, which I don't think that was a great game for them last night. They got gashed on the ground. Made plays at the end, which is great. They're really designed to do that. But when they get all three phases of their game, we, of course, saw it again with special teams, another huge play from them. When they get all three of those going, I think they're a very difficult team to beat, and they've built themselves for that. But it's really going to come down to the offense's ability to get one more touchdown out of these field goal drives and hold on to the ball a little bit more, put games away late. It was a great defensive play on Wilson, but obviously when you're running down the field in that situation, everything is about protecting the ball. He failed to do that, gave them another crack at it, let the defense win the game. If they can put all that together and offensively, you know, basically put the opponent away, something they haven't really been able to do as of late. I think you're looking at a very tough, a real high-level contender in the AFC.
One more thing about penalties, and I think this was the Dallas-San Francisco game on Sunday night. You could clearly see I think it was the Cowboys, trying to keep his foot at the 1 yard, kind of like stopping himself. And he got penalized. And it may have been a San Francisco. It wiped out a touchdown is what it did. People are paying to see long touchdowns. They are not paying to see a guy that's 3 inches over a line.
Yeah, the word that keeps coming up to me, and I think I've said this far too often this weekend and the last night that I have, is pedantic. It's silly. Why are we doing this? You know, to the extent fans are paying money, they're investing their time, their recreational activities surround the sport. They want to talk about things. Now, that doesn't mean eliminate defense because more points is better. What they want is the excitement. They want the spontaneity of this. To intentionally restrict a lot of that, to give us the feeling that we knew the flag went down, for example. We knew the flag went down on Calvin Austin's return. That, by the way, one of the worst defense kick returns I've ever seen at the NFL.
Absolutely.
That was just awful. We knew the flag went down. Typically, yep. It's going to be procedure considering how quickly it seemed to have gone down. But he breaks to the outside. I thought he's gone. What's the penalty? So it's not even a situation where you feel like his celebration is warranted. We need to wait and see what the flag is going to be. Now, I know that that's typical. And, you know, a flag is a flag. You hope that there's a justified reason for it. In this case, there was. But when you're applying that to more situations now, you're taking more scoring plays off the board for things that just simply are not a part of what just happened. You know, for example, you talk to Steelers fans, one thing that they'll talk about is the amount of holding calls that are not called against T.J. Watt. Okay, you know, T.J. Watt's the hero, I get it. Most of the time it's not holding. T.J. Watt rips and dips a lot.
Right.
A defender can basically headlock him if he goes under his arm. That's the rule. It literally is in the rule book. They're allowed to do that. That's not holding. And on his shoulder, backwards, is not holding. Lots of things are not holding. But one of the biggest things is, if he is not pretty clearly going to make a play on the ball, they're not going to call holding either. That's what they're supposed to do. It's because they don't want the game to slow down. Holding doesn't exist unless there's a threat to the ball carrier. It really, what that means is, by definition, they don't consider these things to be illegal unless they reach a certain level, of course. They don't consider them to be against the rules if it's not going to impact the play itself. So my question would be, you're giving out speeding tickets for going 56 and a 55 on illegal shifts, on formations, things like that, that we as watchers have gotten used to seeing. And ask any defensive player what Malik Nabers did last night. There's no competitive advantage to that. If anything, he wasn't ready. He's not going to be as effective on that play. But the whole point in illegal motion is to make sure that he can't start the play moving if he was set beforehand. That's something a defensive player has to check and watch. That's giving them a competitive advantage. He's clearly going to this spot. He's clearly at this spot. The defense has ample opportunity to identify him as ineligible and know what's going on. You don't need to take a touchdown off the board for that. That's just not necessary. And they know that. They've never called that. Troy Aikman was saying that last night. Even when the rules expert said, well, he didn't stop for a full second, they don't stop for a full second, and you know that. They're not going to slow the game down for that. They're supposed to be up-tempo. They're pushing the envelope, and I understand that the letter of the rule might suggest otherwise. But Aikman's point really was, yes, but they don't call this. It's obvious what's going on. We know what's going on. You don't need to call a penalty on that. It wrecks the game. And to your point, things like that, a matter of inches, need to be officiated that closely. Should we be taking points off the board for things that do not directly contribute to the result of the play?
I don't
think that they should, and their history knows that too.
You're the best. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection, imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. Roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies, pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Joined now by the outstanding Mark Brennan, 247 Sports. Mark, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, great to be here, Steve. Obviously, you know, a little bit of a big week here for Penn State football. So happy to be here to talk about it.
Little of a big week, no question. So you watched the game the other night. And in fact, you were on the field at the end. You saw Bo Perbula step in. What was your impression of what he did in that spot?
Well, you know, first of all, we don't have to look back too long to 2021 to realize that a coaching staff can have all the faith in the world in a backup quarterback. And the quarterback could have faith in himself. But until they actually do it in the heat of a moment, in front of a crowd, you don't know what's going to happen. And I don't mean to be negative toward Taquan Roberson at Iowa a few years ago, but it's a different thing getting it done in practice than getting it done in a hostile environment when you're pressed into action. And I think that's what we learned about Bo Perbula. Listen, I think we all had a pretty good feel for what he brought to the table. You know, not exactly the same kind of quarterback as Drew Aller. You know, different skill set, but very great competitor in high school down in New York area, a winner, a proven winner at that level. But did we know that he was going to be able to do it? Did he know? I bet he thought he knew. And did the coaching staff know? Now I think we all know that that moment was not too big for him and that he's capable of doing it. And Steve, I would argue, and I don't even think it's an argument, they have to feel so much better, and fans should feel so much better about Penn State's quarterback situation now. You never want a guy to get banged up on any team. But the way that that happened with Perbula being able to play an entire half, I just thought that was gigantic for that position and for this team. And one other thing, I know I'm going on, but I love the way that Andy Kotelnicki adjusted his game plan. He didn't throw it out the window. He geared it toward the strengths of Bo Perbula and was able to use all the weapons around Bo to make that transition into being the first teamer that much smoother. So just very super impressed. And then the way the kid handled himself after the game, I know you're not surprised. I'm not surprised because I talked to him before. But, you know, the way he's handled himself as a backup quarterback in this day and age of NIL when people don't want to wait their turn, wow. I mean, he handled himself terrifically.
Yeah, because that's the way he is. That's his nature. And I was on a show in Columbus today, and they asked me about this. And I said, look, Andy Kotelnicki is not one of those square peg round hole guys. I mean, he looks at somebody and says, okay, what can he do? And what he can't do, and that's what he does with his guys. So he doesn't just, he's not a one-size-fits-all guy.
Right, and Steve, the thing is, if you go back and look at him, whether it was Buffalo or whether it was Kansas, and this is what I think makes him a great college coach. And I'm not joking with that. I mean, I think he's a great college coach from what I've seen of him so far and what I've seen him in the past. You know, in college, you're not able to go out and draft the sort of quarterback that you want. Yeah, I mean, you can recruit the kind of quarterbacks you want, but you're not always going to be able to get them, especially when you're at Buffalo. So you may get, you know, a running quarterback. You may get a pure dropback quarterback. He's been able to gear his offense around any kind of quarterback that they've had. And to me, that's the sign of an outstanding coach. As you said, the whole round peg square hole thing, he is not trying to fit people into his system. He's molding his system around the people.
Right. And there's another part, too, is the way Penn State's attacked on first down. I don't think people realize this unless, I mean, I realize I do keep my own numbers, so that's part of the reason I can say this. Penn State is within 17 yards. They're within 17 yards on first down of the total offense that teams have had against the Penn State defense this year. I mean, that's kind of a remarkable number.
Steve, I think the number was, and you probably know it, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think they ran 30 first down plays against Wisconsin and averaged about 8 yards per play. Right. I mean, that's insane. I mean, and to look at that two ways. That's amazing. Number two, they should have scored way more than 21 points
right.
on offense.
They're averaging for the season 8.2 yards per play on first down.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Crazy. And you know, listen, that's the kind of stat that you usually see like two games into the season when a team's played nobody. You know what I mean?
Right.
And now you're seeing this, and it's like, so, hey, James Franklin wanted to, you know, what was missing last year? The big plays. He wanted to go out and find somebody who was going to be able to generate big plays, and they've done it. But, you know, the other thing I liked about that game, Steve, is when the game – Penn State, when it needed to grind out the clock and end that game in the fourth quarter, he did not mind handing the ball off to Catron Allen, you know, right. and just having your toughest, most physical runner, and that's not a knock on Singleton because he's tough and physical too, and rely on an offensive line and just beat the Wisconsin defense into submission. So you have both sides of it. You have big plays, but then you also are able, and we've seen this with Penn State at times in games, right, over the last however many years, those last 4 minutes when they need to put a game away, struggling to do it. And I think they're better equipped to do it now because of the diversity of the offense.
And Tyler Warren, right, you've watched him grow and mature, and you've talked to him often. What are we seeing with him? And what are your observations of that?
Yeah, what I would say, Steve, is, and you know this, I don't know that all the fans know it. I think more fans know it now, but he was a high school quarterback.
Right.
And so that comes into play, and I think James made a really good point a couple of weeks ago that, you know, simple things like taking a snap, that may seem simple because quarterbacks do it all the time, or handing the ball off, that may seem simple, but if you never did it and went out there and tried to do it, That's a challenge. I mean, but it goes beyond that. I think the fact that he was a high school quarterback, he did not develop bad tight end habits. What do we know about so many high school tight ends is that they're glorified receivers. James Franklin always likes to say they never stuck their hand in the dirt. You know, they're bigger than everybody, and they just use them as big receivers, and they're not challenged. You have a guy like Ty Warren, and he comes in here, and they're able to mold him. And he was able to redshirt that first year, and they were able to mold him into what a tight end needs to be. And I think one of the more underrated coaches, I shouldn't even say that because I'm really high on his coaching staff, but the job Ty Howell has done, I mean, you just look at what they've done tight end-wise the last few years, and he's not just producing tight ends who generate stats. You could look at Ty Warren and say, listen, you know, however many catches he has, I don't have the numbers here in front of me, but I do have the numbers here in front of me. Yeah, 47 catches, 559 yards, 4 touchdowns. Yep. That's all great. And that's what's going to get him first-team All-Big Ten honors. But that's not what the only thing NFL scouts and college coaches are looking at. This guy goes in there and does the dirty work, too. Watch the game closely. And then the other thing about Ty Warren, 17 catches against USC, Steve. I think he had one catch in the final quarter and overtime. That's not a knock on Ty Warren. What's that telling you? That's telling you that USC adjusted to him.
Yep.
And then what happens, right? Then Trey Wallace catches a pass. Then Julian Fleming catches two passes on fourth down. Then Nick Singleton catches the ball out of the backfield and scores the tying touchdown. So, and then after the game, what does Ty Warren want to talk about? Everybody else. Most prolific game by a tight end ever. And he wants to talk about the job that the quarterback did, that Julian Fleming did, that everybody else did. And it's funny because I sent somebody who I respect a lot, a coach, the video of Ty Warren addressing the media after that game. And he's almost too humble, and I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. But in this day and age, when you look at people, all they're trying to do is get SportsCenter clips. This guy was all he did was give all the credit to everybody else. And it's genuine. It's completely genuine. So, and again, I know I'm going off, but you asked about him as a player, and he's a special player to me. Penn State's had some great tight ends, but I think he's right up there.
What has stuck out to you about the Penn State defense, and why have they been, for the most part, really effective?
I think, and can I take that a step further? To me, I thought last year one of the great things about the Penn State defense, besides being technically sound and athletic and fast, was the aggression and the attitude and the swagger that it played with. And I think that Tom Allen has been able to continue that. So you have great athletes, you have great players, but you need that attitude. And I think the guy who personifies that to me is Jalen Reed. I mean, you know, again, we watch a lot of Penn State football. I'm sure you watch more than I do, watching tape and at practice and whatnot. But when he was creeping up to the line when he eventually got the interception, I knew what was going to happen because they were accounting for him blitzing because he's such a good blitzer. And he's so smart, and Tom Allen's smart enough that they faked the blitz and he dropped back and intercepted the pass. It looks like we're sitting there in the press box and you could see it unfolding. But it's just that kind of, to me, that personifies everything. That here's a guy who will play wherever the team wants him. You know, they wanted to play him more at the line position, but you get KJ Winston injured. Okay, I'm going back and playing safety. And then Day-Day Lane comes along and starts playing better. Okay, they're going to move him back up and play some more line. He'll blitz. He'll tackle people. He'll drop back into coverage. He has that attitude. But the thing that I would add, Steve, is that I think what's setting this team apart from last year is that attitude has carried over onto offense. I think you're seeing a lot of players playing with that same attitude, that same we're not going to lose, that same swagger, that same level of confidence, that when they get behind, there is no measure of panic whatsoever. If it's fourth and whatever at USC, no measure of panic. Everybody's cool, calm, and collected. And that's why I said I wanted to take it a little bit of a step further, because the attitude and all that were there on offense or on defense last year. I think that's carried over to offense, and it's because of some of the strong leaders, the Nick Dawkinses, the Tyler Warrens, the Drew Allers, the Bo Prabulis, who's a strong leader despite not being a starter. I'm sure I'm leaving people out, but I think that's been a real key for this team.
We've talked about Andy Colton, Nicky. I want to talk about Tom Allen for a moment. There was a period of about 8 to 8.5 months where there was a certain way that Tom Allen wanted to play because of his personnel. And then 5 quarters into the season, they lost KJ Winston. They had to then adapt personnel-wise and stylistically, in some cases, how they needed to play. What does that say about Allen, the defensive coaches, and the players, the way they've adapted?
Well, it tells you that he coached at Indiana, and if he was making changes there with the limited personnel that they had on defense, you know, he obviously knows what he's doing. But I go back to what I said about Jay Reed, is that guys are willing to do whatever it takes. So if that's Abdul Carter rushing off the edge, great. If that's Abdul Carter dropping in a zone blitz, great. If that's Abdul Carter lining up over the nose tackle standing up, great. If that's them going into the old Prowler package with Deni Dennis Sutton lined up as a tackle, great. If that's, you know, whoever, whatever, Cam Miller moving up into the line, great. There's no ego, there's no attitude. If that's Dom DeLuca starting, great. If Dom DeLuca's not starting, doesn't care. I'm going to go out there. When my number is called, I'm going to do what I need to do. And that, to me, that is a reflection. You've got to know Tom Allen. And what stands out to you about him, obviously a super intelligent guy, but a super humble guy, right? Yeah. And I think when you see that in a coach and that he's willing to do whatever it takes. And listen, how about Tom Allen? You know, that may not have been the easiest thing for him to decide to go from being on the sideline to up in the box. A coach with a lot of attitude or a lot of ego may not have been willing to do that in the middle of a season, but he did. Hey, what's best for the team? I'm going to go do it. And the other thing I like, Steve, about Tom, and I see it when I'm at practice, I'm sure you see it even more, the responsibility that he's given Dan Connor. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, number one, Dan Connor is now talking to Kobe King in the headset or whoever the Mike linebacker is. Imagine having that guy. You know, we covered Dan Connor. And, you know, was there a more cerebral linebacker that they've had? And they've had some cerebral linebackers, but he's right up there in being super smart. But then you see him out on the practice field, and Tom lets Dan take them through so many of those drills. And you could see that the players are kind of laser focused. And, you know, I mentioned that because, again, you know, Tom Allen, he's not worried that the media are there and seeing Dan Connor coach everybody up. He's worried about his team being better. And you know what else he's worried about? Making Dan Connor a better coach. And I think that says a lot about the man.
Mark, always outstanding. Appreciate any time I get to spend with you. Thanks so much for being with us.
I appreciate it. Keep doing a great job with Jack.
Okay, thanks. Mark Brennan, see ya. Mark Brennan, 247 Sports. We will come back and wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
More coming up tomorrow, including Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football. He'll join us at 1:35 tomorrow. Brad Nessler joins us out of the gate on Thursday at 1:05. High school roundtable. Did everybody decide to go to the playoffs?
Schick did not make the playoffs. Seals Grove is at Jersey Shore, and Lewisburg has a bye.
Oh, good. All right. At least somebody had discretion. All right. No, seriously, you got to be 500. You're not 500. You do not belong.
Well, Schick would have made it. They just didn't make it. They didn't decide not to.
Right. I know that. I understand that. They were told, no,